Ireland entered into its first lockdown on March 12, 2020, after the arrival of COVID-19 to our shores. With it came the closure of bars and music venues across the country, and ground to a halt the Irish live music industry, affecting thousands of musicians. This 10-part documentary series will tell the stories of 10 such musicians. Some will have had to completely adapt how they perform in a new virtual era, whilst for others they found their services became even more important. Each story is unique and compelling and shows where their love of music began and the resilience of the East Cork music community. After 2 years of lockdowns and restrictions, a new live music landscape has emerged. So can the grassroots musicians of a community filled with musical talent bounce back from the day the music died? Caroline Farrar is one of Munster's busiest wedding singers. With a career spanning 20 years, Caroline has also expanded her musical performance to solo concerts in some of the most iconic East Cork venues, such as St Mary's Collegiate Church in Youghal and Cove Cathedral.
First started singing at the age of 5, okay, Fesh Matthew, Cork. My teacher put me into the competition. Don't know how she figured out that I could sing. Obviously, I must have been going around the class singing. So she put me in. I was 5. I came second. And then from every year from then on till I was about 15 or 16, I would go to Fesh Matthew. And then, like, the church music thing is obviously, it's my area. And I was brought to Mass, obviously, as a lot of us were when we were kids. And my mum used to bring us to folk mass on a Saturday night in Cove Cathedral. And I absolutely loved the music. I think I was about 8, I'd say, when I really kind of, you know, kind of got into it, like. And at the end of mass, I would go over and they'd still be singing the final piece. And I'd go over and sit down like I was at a concert, like in awe of these people singing this really, what I thought was really cool music at the time. And sat there starstruck, like they were my superstars to me, you know. And always then from then on, it's like I wanted to join a choir, you know, but there obviously wasn't a youth choir at that stage. When I got into secondary school, then I was involved in the musicals in there. And then Two Priests came to Cove, and through a kind of a tragic event, the death of a young person in town, they introduced the Taizé Mass to Cove. So this was a really kind of, it was very much geared towards the youth. So they got a youth choir together and we created this Mass where you kind of go, it's a lot of chanting and stuff like that. And it was, you know, lots of young people involved. Like, it was trendy. We thought it was really trendy. So there was a lot of us involved. And obviously joined the choir at that stage. There was loads of us in the choir. And then just have been in a choir ever since. Did my Leinster, went to college, ended up doing the arts degree with the view to doing the HDIP and teaching, which I did. And then realised about 10, 12 years ago that I actually would prefer to do the singing kind of full time. I'd always sung for weddings. I did my first wedding when I was 15. and I always laugh, like, or cringe more like. I did my first wedding in like a pair of jeans and a woolen jumper. Like, sure, I hadn't a clue I was 15. But the priest that was saying the Mass kind of said to me, he was like, do you want to sing for this wedding? Like, it was only just really starting around that time, the whole music at weddings and singers at weddings. So from then on, then it was word of mouth, and, you know, the next person was asking for to have me, and that's how it went. So it kind of got me through college, you know, the weddings and all that. And I always had it there at weekends. Obviously, weddings are weekends, weekend jobs. So it was a great kind of supplement to what I was doing, you know, what the kind of the plan was, as I said, to be a teacher. But then realised, yeah, that I actually did prefer maybe the singing. And so kind of went into that. And then that's kind of where singing for funerals and things came in. Because obviously I had done a few, you know, but I hadn't thought about branching out, say, from Cove or even Youghal. So I just threw my name into the hat in Cork, into the Undertakers around there, and kind of have been working around with them ever since, and the weddings as well. So it's, and then concerts dotted in with that, you know, and musicals here in town as well. So it's been good. It's been varied, you know, varied. There was a lot to think about, right? Because before it had always supplemented other work that I had done. So like I had been a legal secretary in another life as well, but I had always done the weddings at the weekends. I would take half days from work, you know, to sing for weddings. It was strange, really. It was like I was almost dreading becoming a full time teacher, because I knew then I'd have to give up, you know, weddings that might happen on a Thursday or a Friday. And I always hated turning people down, you know. So I was kind of dreading that. But I suppose I had looked at, you know, the weddings that were coming in and the weddings that I had done in the years. And you know, you kind of, they're obviously all most of them condensed into a summer period and the Christmas period, which is always really busy. So kind of when you spread them out, you're kind of going, I'm okay. And if I can get, you know, one or two funerals in the city or whatever, you know, it would be okay, you know. I mean, the weddings you're booked a year and a half, 2 years in advance, so you know they're coming. Funerals are different in that, you know, you might get a call 2 or 3 days before. So you can't bank that money. Do you know what I mean? You don't know what's coming from week to week. I'd always done concerts with other people. So like there's three of us that do concerts every year in Cove, myself, John Daly and Dominic Finn. And we've done annual Christmas concerts in the Sirius Arts Centre in Cove every year. 2003, I think, was the first one. I think we're coming up to 20 years this year. I was glad of that, but then decided, you know, why not do something on my own? So I did. And I had a band that my husband was in, Richie, and we'd Steve Cooney down that night playing. That was in Middleton. That was in the meeting place. What was the meeting place in Middleton? That was actually in 2014, because I was pregnant with Jojo, with my daughter at the time. So I did that. That was kind of a different vibe though, because I had recorded like an EP with Steve. So Steve Cooney had produced this EP. There's four or five songs on it. And we had done that. And then I wanted to do this kind of concert just to, you know, showcase those songs and do that. So I did that. And it's nerve wracking, you know. And I remember ringing up the guy that was in charge of the meeting place and saying I wanted to book it and the rest of it. And he was like, yeah, that's great. And if we sell this amount of tickets, we're doing well, like, you know. And of course, ended up selling out and he was gobsmacked, you know. he obviously didn't realise, you know, because I don't have a name as such, but yet with weddings and things and you know, having been involved in shows and all that, you know, people know of me, but like I wouldn't be, you know, out there as such, you know. So I suppose people that hear that I've got a concert coming, they're going to come, you know. So that was great. That was nice, actually, because it was kind of, he was really shocked that I had sold out and that people were like waiting for tickets.
You hold out your hand and pull me in close, and you open your heart as we dance. There's no need for words, I see it in your eyes, feel it in your touch. Just being here with you, your heart close to mine, so close, it's all I can hear. here as we dance. We're moving in time to a silent beat, to a beating heart. As the night lingers on, I know I'm right where I belong, just here, lost in a song that only we can hear. Though the music is hushed, we can still hear it play, guiding our steps along the way. I know that this dance is all we've got left. So let's,
well, I suppose like most people, when it hit first, you know, we all thought it'd be all done and dusted in a couple of months. And at that time, like, it was March. And, you know, weddings were quiet. I mean, I didn't have anything, I think, until May. So I thought, you know, like, I would say most of us thought surely by then, May or June, it'd be all over with, like, and you know, there'd be nothing. But then time went on, you know, and you've brides getting in touch saying that they're going to have to move their dates. And you know, so it kind of stops, you know. And I suppose it was a very, it was difficult for people to gauge how long things were going to last. So I think people were putting off to the very last minute, postponing their wedding and getting new dates, you know. So it was a case of like, you might not know until 2 or 3 weeks before a date that somebody's changing it. And, you know, that was obviously, yeah, that was stressful, like, because you're thinking as the months were going on and you're getting close to the summer and you've a diary full of weddings and now it's looking like you're going to have nothing, you know. So, I mean, at that point, like most, I signed up for the COVID payment because the summer was annihilated. It was like, that was it. It was gone. I was fortunate in a way. And it's a difficult thing to say, but you know, people still needed what I was providing, the service that I was providing. Funeral ceremonies had been so curtailed, and the people being allowed to attend, even the family members allowed to attend, were greatly reduced. it was very stark. It was a very strange situation, you know. Turning up to a church, in a big church, and there's only 10 people there, you know, in the family. But again, an intensely privileged thing for me to do. I, you know, was able to be in there to help this family, you know, and make this crazy reality, you know, a bit less stark for them, you know, because I think that if you had taken away the option of music for a funeral service during COVID, like, it would have been like, you know, even worse for the family, that, you know, everything would have been just completely stripped away. At least they were able to have that. They were able to have some music. They were able to have some, you know, a song or two that their loved one had liked or something like that, you know, and that was a privilege for me to be able to do.
Beauty is within grasp. Hear the islands call. The last mile is upon us. I'll carry you if you fall. I know the armor's heavy now. I know the heart is tired. It's beautiful just over the wild mountainside. snow is falling all over, out of clear blue skies. Crow is flying high over, you and I are gonna wander high up where the air is red, wild horses ride. It's beautiful just over the wild mountain side. Wild and free we roam, only a mile to go. Hear the highlands call, the last mile is upon us. I'll carry you if you fall. I know the armor's heavy now, I know the heart's inside. It's beautiful, let's go over the wild mountainside.
And so as that kind of gained momentum, in a way, I came off the pavement because I thought, you know, I'm lucky enough here. I'm able to actually make a few bob, you know, here. So though we didn't have the weddings, as I said, I was OK. It wasn't a kind of, you know, the floor didn't completely give way underneath me. When COVID hit. So compared to people now who had pub gigs or, you know, wedding bands, I mean, that was all completely gone. People, you know, who only had that aspect of it, you know, because as I said, I'm in a totally different area of the music scene. So I consider myself extremely privileged that I was able to, you know, and lucky that I was able to still sing during that time, you know.
Guide us with your grace, give us faith so we'll be.
Yeah, so obviously, as I mentioned, we would do the Sirius concerts every Christmas, myself, John Daly and Dominic Finn. That year, 2020, things had kind of eased slightly, if I remember, in the run-up to Christmas. But in September, the series had kind of gotten onto us and was kind of asking, you know, what were we thinking, you know, whatever. And we were kind of saying, like, you know, I think things were still new and people were nervous, you know, that, you know, having to reduce numbers to us to so little that you're kind of going, is it worth our while to put this on? Live, you know, or like in person. So we did suggest the doing a live concert from the series, but they weren't able to facilitate that. So we chatted together, and I was talking to my husband Richie, and he kind of said, why don't you do it here in the sitting room? You know, we have the space, and we could get one of our friends to come in and help us, Carol Prendergast, to come in and help with the sound and setting up the videos and stuff and putting it up on Facebook. So we kind of thought, yeah, you know, why not? We didn't know what kind of a response we'd get. We said that we'd go up and we'd kind of, lots of people now, like Martin was doing tip jars, you know, he was doing his Saturday night things and he was putting a tip jar. So we kind of said, look, we'll do something similar. If people want to give something, grand. If they don't, no problem. We're just happy to kind of, you know, be singing and bringing a bit of Christmas cheer to people, you know. And it was actually really nice because there was people tuning in from Germany and the UK and America. It was actually really nice, you know, and we were delighted with how it went and the success of it. And we ended up doing it again the following year, even though we were able to do one in-person night in the series. They wanted us to do more, but we kind of wanted to do another online because it was nice to think that there's people tuning in from abroad, you know, expats, like, you know, that would know the three of us as well. So we did it the following year as well, and that was a great success too, and it was lovely. It just seemed to bring everyone together, you know, just made the world a bit smaller in that time. And people that were doing these online concerts and gigs, you know, it was like a cozy little feeling because people could be at home with their glass of wine, the fire's lighting, you know, maybe they've hooked up to their TV and they're watching it at home, you know, and it just had this really cozy kind of feel to it. So yeah, I think that, and I mean, obviously people that are living away from Ireland were able to tune in and kind of be transported back home just for a couple of hours. You know, it was really nice, and I've no doubt that, you know, they would have told their friends, you have to watch the, you know, these are people from Cote or whatever, you know, tune into this, it's going to be lovely and Christmassy, and, you know, so yeah, I definitely think that, and for a lot of people that would have done those kind of things, it definitely opened up and brought their music out to the wider world, like, yeah. Like, I suppose, as again, the weddings, they're summertime. So, I mean, you're coming into 2022, you've that start of the year, it's not that busy anyway. But, you know, I think we had done Christmas and things were fine, you know, and I don't think I was worried that we'd be postponing weddings or resetting dates again. I think at that stage anyway, I don't think people would have kind of welcomed another, you know, lockdown or restrictions or anything like that. I think we'd had our fill at that stage, and I think they probably would have had an uprising or something if they had tried to do that. I wasn't, but I was thinking, all right, you know, of was there, you know, was there something something else that I might be interested in, you know, in doing, maybe changing career or something. And it wasn't so much that, it was just, maybe doing something else, like. But I think I have these little moments every now and again, you know, you're thinking, and I think it's because, you know, there's a doubt that, again, just going back to that whole, the pressure that's on you, that you know, that what I'm doing is good enough, do you know? And so you'd be going, if I had a different job, if I went back teaching now, making more of a contribution to society, like, do you know what I mean? And 'tis weird actually, because in the last week or so, and the funerals that I've sung for, I've never had so many people texting me and calling me afterwards to say thank you. So I'm like, right, the universe is trying to tell me something, you know, that keep ploughing away at it, like, you know, because it's, as I said, it's a personal thing, and so it's hard not to take things personally when it comes to music and singing, like, you know. But no, back on track now again, full steam ahead with the music. It took me a long time to kind of reconcile with myself that, you know, I didn't actually want to kind of like be famous, and I'm inverted commas there. I never really wanted to go after it. I mean, I'd done a few things, you know, I'd gone for Riverdance and, you know, other things like that. But it was almost always terrified if I got it, because then you're like, what does that mean now, you know? And I don't know, it's a strange thing to say, but I've always felt there's a kind of a pressure on people who have a talent like that. There's a pressure on you to kind of, you know, go and do something with it, as in be famous, be well known, record albums, tour the world or whatever, you know. And it's like doing what I do, which is very low key, but rewarding still. Always seems to me like that it's not, you know, it's, I always be thinking that, you know, if I die tomorrow or whatever, she was a great singer, like, it's an awful pity she didn't do more with it, like, do you know, that kind of, in the back of my mind, and what does that mean, do more with it, what does that mean, you know, because there's not room for everyone to be famous, there's not room for everyone to make it, but yet I'm able to earn a living from it, and what I do, I know, you know, brings people happiness and brings people comfort, you know, which is nice. I don't have to be selling, you know, thousands of records and stuff like that to be successful in what I do. I am successful in what I do, you know, so I think that's kind of where I am. Yeah.
It's cold and dark outside. My heart just wants to run and hide. Confusion's in the air. It's getting harder to know which road to take. Sometimes in the dead of night, I lie awake. Try to make sense of this life. Endless night goes on. Thoughts unyielding, racing till the dawn. Sleep is not my friend. I'm trying hard to find that road to take. Sometimes in the dead of night, I lie awake and try to make sense of this life. There in the darkest night shines the brightest light. It is the of your life, and in your blackest hour, know that you are not alone, know the lighthouse will guide you home. Children laughing remind me there's a way. Sense of sadness I need to change. A beating heart deserves to be saved. No more sleepless nights wondering which road to take. Sometimes in the dead of try to make sense of this life. There in the darkest night shines the brightest light. It is the lighthouse of your life. And in your blackest hour, know that you are not alone. Know the lighthouse will guide you home. There in the darkest night shines the brightest light. It is the lighthouse of your life. And in your blackest hour, know that you are not alone. Know the lighthouse will guide.
The Day the Music Died was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland under Sound and Vision programming to support the live music sector.